Welcome to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, covering car culture and the automotive world with Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and Steve, the producer, Johan. Let's see what's up this week.
Hey, it is Tuesday, November 12th, 2019. Brady Wright, Shane Osborne, Steve, the producer, Johan, joining a literal galaxy of listeners on this 111th episode of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. You can find us on iTunes, iHeart Podcasts, which, by the way, the iHeart Podcast Awards are coming up. So if you happen to be somebody who's interested in those sorts of things, please nominate us to be the coolest podcast in the entire universe. We're also on Spotify and, of course, Podomatic.com. Make sure you like and follow our Facebook page for all the latest shows, because they are there all the time, thanks to Steve and I, who spend literally moments posting them every week. Facebook lets us do that. Hey, by the way, if you happen to be a member of a group, a Facebook group, a car group, or something like that, and you are not getting a link regularly to the show on that group, let us know. Email us at contact us at horsepowerchromeandrust.com. Let us know, hey, join the group so that we can share the podcast with you, because we're happy to do that.
Yep.
And if on occasion you happen to see a link and it gets you one of those little Facebook messages that say this content is no longer available because it was published weird, we never publish weird. We always publish publicly, but occasionally Facebook's little algorithm decides that we're spam.
Yes.
And we're not the only podcast to have this happen. It's actually kind of common.
Yes.
So if that's the case, please go to Facebook, go to our Facebook page, email me, message me, or something like that, and we'll fix it. We appreciate that. Our first segment is always called Back to the Blacktop. Steve Johan has automotive news and information as usual. What you got tonight, my man?
Well, this comes from How to Make a Pile of Money in a Very Short Time.
I like that. I want that book.
Yes. Here's the secret.
Okay.
Just create a business and go public as soon as possible. And then once it goes public, you sell off all your shares or a majority of your shares. And all of a sudden, you have $500+ million. And the following is a perfect example.
Okay.
We've all heard of Uber, which just reported a $1.2 billion third quarter loss.
Right.
Uber Technologies
this
Incorporated.
This does not sound like success so far.
No. Well, here's the thing. Oh. Uber Technologies Incorporated took one other step to further step away from its contentious past, symbolically anyway, as former CEO Travis Kalanick sold nearly $550 million worth of company stock.
Right.
Which isn't shown, and maybe, you know, that's where some of this loss is coming from.
Yeah, yeah.
And all the other venture capitalists that went into there, they sold off their shares. So I suspect that's where the $1.2 billion loss showed up. So the bottom line is, if you want to get rich quick and you don't want to invest in your company for the long haul, just do an IPO and sell off as soon as possible and move on and do the same thing all over again.
You got to be careful doing that, though, because as soon as you do an IPO and then they see the founder's stock going, that triggers the market.
Well, that's why the value just went down.
But you see that. So smart investors are going to go, I'm not buying that. And it's you can do it,
it's
but
not
it's
good for the company.
No, it's not.
But the guy that at the top who wanted to start the thing and get out as quick as possible, it was good for him. And I'm not saying I agree with this. I think, quite frankly, it's dead dastardly, and I don't have anything good to say about
that.
The
FTC eventually comes and finds you for that.
Well, they don't do a lot of that anymore.
They do.
It would be interesting to see how many don't. But anyhow, speaking, we were talking just off air about SEMA, and one of our guests
wrapped up this week.
Was out there, and his team just won an award, and we're going to get him on the show and in the weeks in the future and have him share all about it. But the numbers are in the SEMA show, and exhibitors voted on the vehicles that replacement parts best represents the best business opportunities for aftermarket parts, as in replacement parts.
Right, which is what SEMA is all about.
Oh, that's right. And the announcement was made, and this is what it is. Can you guess the car category?
No.
Ford Mustang. Ford Mustang.
Confidence you're going to tell me.
Yeah, it's Ford Mustang, which makes a lot of sense. There's
so
a heck of a lot of
replacement parts for Ford Mustang is the number one.
Yes.
What that tells you is Ford Mustangs break a lot.
No, what it means is there's a lot of custom parts.
There's a lot
for,
of aftermarket stuff, sure.
Yes.
Of course.
Then truck, under the truck category is Chevrolet, Silverado.
Yeah.
Under the 4x4 is Jeep Wrangler. Under the Sport Compact is Audi RS3, and I don't think of, you know, compact sport SUVs, and but I'm like, well, yeah, there is a huge market out there. A lot of people like doing that.
That's the fastest growing SUV category is the compact SUV.
And I guess people like to gussy them up, and we'll have to bring on people from that segment and have them talk to us. And then under the power sports vehicle category is, the, of course, Polaris RZR, which, you know, after they solved their 500,000 recalls on that thing, I think they finally got things working right. But yeah, if you think about it, SEMA is all about selling really cool parts, customizing
aftermarket stuff. It's the vendor
stuff.
Show.
Yep.
And as such, it is a huge segment of the automotive market, because people buy a new car once, but they buy parts and gussy stuff for it forever.
Ever.
And, I mean, a friend of mine just now, just yesterday, well, actually today, yesterday he bought a new to him car, and he picked it up today.
Yep.
He bought a 2005 Cadillac STS, which I have one of.
Yep.
And he bought the same car, except his is white. Well, it's sort of a cream color.
Yeah, it's kind of that cream color
with
white.
With a cream interior. It's, there's some nifty paint code to it. But the first thing he did is call me up and said, so where can I get a hood ornament? I said, it has one, doesn't it? He said, no. Somebody had broken it off, because people love to steal the Cadillac
hood. Yes.
So, you know, he's already looking for stuff, and he will continue to do that kind of stuff.
Right.
And it's, I mean, it's a huge thing. Floor mat, steering wheels.
Yeah, my son, they don't pay us, but WeatherTech, my son put them all in his new his new car, and he put it in the Mazda truck when he had that before he bought his new
car.
And
those things are computer fitted. I mean,
and they
are.
Really
nice job.
And they actually fit so much nicer than the ones that were in there.
Oh, yeah. Yep, big deal.
And then he puts the weather thing that goes over the wind, the doors that go, so you can roll down your window a couple inches and not get the rain
drip
in there.
In, yeah.
Those are actually really cool. I'm thinking of getting some for my van after I've done some other work to it. I like to have the air circulating, but I don't like the rain coming in.
Sure, on your sleeve while
you're
driving.
Now, the old days, like my El Camino's got the little drip rail, so it kind of catches some of that. But the new ones, it's all rounded.
Well, the drip rail catches what comes off the roof.
Right.
But if you're actually in the rain and the window's open,
well, that's true.
It misses. Yeah. They've made those things for quite a while. They used to call them wind deflectors, but it served the same purpose.
Yep.
And now, of course, they're much better made and kind of cool looking, and it is a huge thing that people
buy. It is. So anyways, congratulations to the five finalists.
Yeah, good for them.
Someday we'll make it down there. Somebody I know said, yeah, I've been to 11 of them already, and it gets kind of tiring after a while because he's working the program.
Yeah, vendor
shows down there working.
If you go to look, it's a lot of fun, but then it's a couple-a-day thing. If you go to work the show, then it's a lot of work, and you can't get out.
It's 14-hour days
from
start to finish.
I've done both, and it's fun in a way to be a vendor, but it's also a lot of work.
It is. And then comes this interesting information. Soon, at a Fred Meyer or QFC or Kroger, you'll be able to get a really cool program. It's called Kroger, the Cincinnati-based grocery retailer, has partnered with Santa Monica, California-based TrueCar to create a Kroger auto buying program.
Oh, they're going to do what Costco does.
Yeah. The program allows customers the ability to see what others in their area paid for a new car based on recent vehicle transactions, in addition to providing access to an average discount of $3,400 and look at live inventory on 16,500 certified dealer lots.
You'll be able to buy a car through Kroger.
Yeah, and it's going to be at a discount.
Nice.
Because they're going to treat it as a fleet kind of deal where then they can get these great discounts.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it makes a lot of sense. In addition to that, your membership says you'll get a $40 annual fee, a complimentary VIP membership, and the membership provides an additional fuel point for nearly every dollar spent.
Right.
So we already are part of the Fred Meyer credit card, and we get a lot of savings off just the gas alone.
Yeah.
But I think it's wonderful. Just another opportunity.
It is kind of the wave of the future. I mean, online businesses are taken over for brick and mortar. It's kind of sad. Thanks for tuning in. Coming up on the Windshield View, we got Casey Putsch, founder and CEO of the Genius Garage Racing, aerospace and design programs, and more on Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
Okay, forest animals. Kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow, Have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. River, how's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man.
I love it. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. Okay. Squirrel.
The forest has been preparing just for you. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
This is Robert Durf with the Porsche Club of America Driver Skills Program. Thank you for listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And just want to remind everybody that it's no fun unless it smells a little bit like burnt oil and burnt rubber.
Hey, car enthusiast, are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E-Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E-Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame-off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motor work, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E-Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
My mind's out of gear, and my heart's in overdrive. I've everything to fear. I ain't never been more.
Well, welcome back to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, and we are the first half of the Windshield View, and this week we're talking with the founder of Genius Garage, Casey Putch. And hi, Casey, how's it going?
Very well, guys. Thanks for having me on. I'm actually just sitting here at my desk soldering an old school 1960s slot car build.
Hey, perfect. It doesn't take a genius to do stuff like that, but I'm glad you're doing it.
Oh, you know, if Shane was in here, he'd love that because he loves
slot cars.
Oh, that's
right. Yeah, our third co-host is a slot car fanatic.
Yes.
That's cool. So I love the name of your outfit, Genius Garage. Tell me how that got started. Genius Garage Racing, I guess, is the full name, yeah?
Well, indeed, for that one particular program, Genius Garage is a concept that really, something stuck with me throughout my life, but the vision hit me hardcore in 2013. And the point of it was, there's a catch-22 that exists for young people coming out of college. How do you get a job if you don't have experience? And how do you get experience if you can't get a job?
Yeah,
and
that's
that faces so many people. And I just looked around and I'd seen what I went through in college, trying to find some direction, trying to find any kind of mentor, any kind of guide, just not having that. And then all the years afterward of fighting to make my way. And there was one night in the shop, the facility, where I was maintaining race cars for people, doing custom builds, engineering work, et cetera. Where I looked around, I thought, you know, if I'm going to be involved with cars and racing and airplanes and building anyway, and I'm surrounded by a shop to create, I've got my own experiences and wisdom to share, and I've got a so-called Rolodex full of incredible people with lifetime wisdom to share, why don't I just do this in a way of a structure that makes a difference for young people and get some jobs? So that was really the moment that it was born.
Hey, and, Casey, we're getting some muffled sound here. I don't know if you could do something to your adjusting your phone or something, but
just hold it a little closer to your face. We'll be fine.
Yeah.
So I love the fact. I love the fact that you used the word Rolodex because that brings us back to what it was when I was coming up. But you know, it really sort of speaks to the fact that the more contacts you have, the more people you know, the more you can reach out and, you know, share ideas and get information and you know, make stuff happen. What was the kind of genesis, if you will, of you know, taking that to the next step? I mean, did you have a brick and mortar place? You had a shop of some sort that you were doing things in.
Yeah, I did. And the idea hit me and I got people around me that would be interested in that kind of together, create a board, so to speak, and everything. But it just didn't quite come to be. And someone who was supposed to donate money to contribute in there never did. So it just it didn't have that traction. And then toward the end of the year, one of my guys said that there was a an IndyCar roller on eBay, kind of like what I was thinking about. And I thought to myself, you know, Genius Drive is too good a concept not to do. I'm going to do it myself no matter what this first year. And ended up picking up that IndyCar roller and doing the program.
Well, that's kind of fun.
Sounds easy. It was not. But it was it kick-started something really serious and something really great.
So now, do you have your own garage? Is it attached to your home? Is it a separate building somewhere else?
It's a separate building, yeah. Genius Garage is a standalone building. Inside it are all the race cars, the airplanes we've built, the design studios, all that jazz. Yeah, it's all Genius Garage. Or with the exception of a few motorcycles that belongs to myself so I can have a little bit of fun now and then.
Sure.
Well, now, where are you located?
The Genius Garage facility is in Bowling Green, Ohio, currently, which is northwest Ohio. And I live in a close by city called Perrysburg.
All right.
And when did you launch the actual program?
2014 was the first physical year of doing Genius Garage. So this, in fact, was 6 years of doing programs with students. And when we started, actually, though, it was down in Columbus, Ohio.
Okay. So now, as I look at the website, by the way, geniusgarageracing.com, for those who are listening, and we will put that up on our page, too, so people can find the link. You actually have several different sort of, I'm going to say business groups, it's really not that, but I mean, you have different programs that you sort of concentrate on. Can you walk us through the different pieces of the puzzle there?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for asking. The racing team really is centered around automotive engineering, and the best way to do that is centering the students around creating them into a racing team. So we have different cars that reflect different aspects of, shall we say, a curriculum and experience. So we've got a carbon fiber monocoque Indy car right from the year of the split when they were the fastest, 96, 97, to Raynard. We have a late 80s two-frame IMSA Corvette. We've got an early 90s carbon fiber prototype and a C3 Greenwood Corvette that needs to be restored. The other program is the aerospace program. And the first year, let's see, that was 2018. Wait, no. Yes. I'm getting confused on what year it is nowadays. 2018. Wait, is this 2019?
Yes, it is.
For another 45 days.
I'm sorry, guys. Yeah. We built a Southwest Camel, the World War I biplane.
Oh, nice. You got the Snoopy plane.
Yes. Exactly. It's iconic. And closed that up in a little over 4 months. Took it to Oshkosh. And then we also had a BD-5 Microjet, which is the same airplane from the Roger Moore James Bond movie Octopussy.
Absolutely. Those things are sexy.
They are hot little planes, that is for sure. We did that plane up, mentored him. He's real interested in aerospace design, but gosh, he comes from Eastern Washington State, so there's not many opportunities for him out there. So he came out this way for the summer, drove his Miata all the way, and built the BD-5 as a static display. We're not going to invest the money in the motor and the avionics and stuff, but it was a heck of a project for him. The Southwest Camel will fly, though. That one is actually going out to the local airport here in the next month.
How cool is that?
Yeah, and then, of course, we've got the design program where I was mentoring some students on two-dimensional rendering and concept design, as well as some studio clay model type work.
Nice. And are they doing any CAD stuff as well, or is it mostly old school?
That's a really good thing you asked that question. Absolutely not, is my answer, and here's why. They do enough of that in school.
Right.
Why would I rehash everything they get in school? What they're missing out on is all the real-world, seat-of-the-pants, hands-on, use your eyes, ears, feel, senses to conceptualize, fabricate, build, and create. And that's what's really missing from school. And that's the experience that the industry wants so much from young people that they're just not getting.
Well, you know, the interesting now, so how many kids have, how long is this program? Is it like several months, a full year? Is it a high school, college? What age demographic are you going for?
Collegiate primarily. You know, they're over 18, they're in engineering or design, et cetera, and they're getting ready to start their lives, so to speak, to get into a career field. So it's the perfect pivotal point for them. Typically, the programs begin earlier in the year, kind of February, March, and will actually go through the spring and into the summer. So for students that are more local, if they're in school or doing co-ops or jobs and things like that, they're able to come in during the week at times outside of that schedule to make it work. In the earlier part of the year where they may still be in school, we'll also do some field trips, maybe take them to like Pratt & Miller, different NASA facilities, United States Air Force, things like that. Just get them well-rounded. Bringing in interesting mentors to speak to them could be anything from CEOs to fighter pilots. And, of course, we're building our cars and airplanes. And then come a little later in the year when school's about out, maybe we'll take the race cars out to Mid-Ohio. That way, start first doing the first test, getting it ready, modifying, changing, setting up, whatever. And then, of course, the summer, you're still building and doing, but you're getting into when it's time to go racing or when it's time to go to an air show or whatnot. So it works out really nicely that way. This past year was a little bit different in that we had students actually move here for Genius Garage. So doing it more full-time, and they want to invest their time to do that, how valuable the experience is to them. Beyond that, and this is something that will launch more in the future when I'm able to build the flagship facility and, you know, actually employ people.
Well, I'm going to Casey, I'm going to have you hold that thought. We are coming up to our break, and I don't want to miss it. For more of Genius Garage, just go to www.geniusgarageracing.com. There you're going to find all sorts of cool stuff about what Casey and his team have been doing. And you can also find him on YouTube under Casey Putsch. And we'll be right back with more of the show with Casey.
You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
More horsepower, chrome, and rust after these messages.
Attention men under the age of 35. You know what really impresses the ladies? When a guy has a few drinks and later gets pulled over for buzz driving. That could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Oh, I know. You drive more carefully when you're buzzed. You've proven that hundreds of times. A woman admires that kind of confidence. And you've practiced how to speak if a cop does pull you over. Slowly, clearly, and politely, like, "Good evening, officer." And what woman doesn't find it adorable that you call it buzzed even though the law calls it drunk? You could kiss $10,000 goodbye, along with any chance of having a girlfriend.
Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving.
Hello, this is Zach with Cascade Campers. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
I'm jumping in with my clothes off!
Most party fouls are pretty dumb, but if you decide to drink and drive underage, you could lose your license and your freedom. Learn more at ultimatepartyfoul.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Back in Vehicle City. So we are back with the second half of the windshield view, and we were just getting into some of the fun stuff that Casey Putsch is doing at thegeniusgarageracing.com. And as we left off, we're actually talking about some of the programs. And I was going to ask you, Casey, you're working with students, and you're just talking about, you know, you're working towards a brick and mortar, sort of having people there more, you know, more consistently than coming in at different times. When you first started bringing students in, what schools did you work with, and you know, setting that whole thing up as a curriculum sort of activity must have been a pretty interesting process. Can you walk us through some of that?
Well, Genius Garage, in terms of the curriculum, that was rather easy. When you know what the objective is, basically to give the students the hands-on experience, the team building, everything they're not getting in school, it really wasn't that hard figuring that out. With regard to reaching out to local schools back when we did that more primarily, it was simply a nature of saying, hey, Genius Grads is a 501c3 public educational charity. This is the educational internship we offer. Here's the experience. Here's the time frame. The schools, of course, were happy to promote that to our students.
Sure.
In the last 2 years, with the amount of connection and publicity and social media we've generated, frankly, I've got a waiting list of students from all around the United States and the world.
So, oh, boy. Well, that is the way you want it to work.
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, the thing that's amazing about it is it's kind of fascinating that that has happened so hardcore so quickly with the students and the public figuring it out, because Genius Garage is really the ideal talent pool for engineering all around the world, engineering businesses. We even had a manager from Tesla find out about us and fly out to the middle of nowhere, Ohio, for the weekend and drag one of the cars, or even, you know, spend the whole day with the students. And after dinner, he said to them, I know what it takes for you to be an engineer at Genius Garage. And if Casey trusts you to do that, I trust you to be an engineer at Tesla. And gave them his cell phone number.
That is great. That is super. What an endorsement that is. You know, one of the reasons I asked you about that was we have a guest that we've had on the show a couple of times who is doing a similar thing, although I don't think quite at the same level as you. But his name is Kenny Earls. He runs a program called Keeping Hot Rodding Alive out of Kingman, Arizona.
Yeah.
And are you familiar with Kenny?
Not yet. No, I'm not.
He's an amazing guy, and his students, he's also a 501, and he brought some students in, you know, basically through the let's do a shop class kind of thing, but created a curriculum. They just built a car for SEMA and took it there. It actually won something this year. He's off and running. But, yeah, I mean, it's very heartening, I think, for us. Because, you know, we're interested in everything that has to do with automotives, to see people reintroducing and championing the idea of, you know, auto technology in schools or to school or college-age kids, because it's not something that's being done ever since they killed shop classes. Even Chip Foose says so, you know, it's just not a thing anymore, and it should be.
Well, what happened was culturally, this was probably 30 years ago or more, the push toward just college prep, and then looking down at anything with your hands is considering it to be blue collar.
Right.
That's something bad.
Yeah.
You know, killed it all. And then when you guys mentioned, you guys do CAD, that was part of that giant push for the collegiate world.
Exactly.
And what's completely missing is a hands-on, you know, I mean, if a kid all they ever done is work on SolidWorks on a computer, they're not going to engineer or design any new great invention.
Sure.
It's not.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to be hands-on. I mean, like I said to you guys early on, I'm sitting here soldering a 1960s block car chassis. Well, I teach young people with these because all of the same engineering, tech, fabrication, thinking, everything goes into a 60s slot car, goes into rail racing cars. And this stuff has been lost, and it's so valuable, it's got to come back.
Yeah. Now, I agree with you 100%. In fact, you mentioned something a while back that it made my ears perk up. The whole idea of clay modeling. You know, nobody does clay modeling anymore, and yet you should. I mean, that's how you got those beautiful, you know, coachwork lines and the, you know, the original wind tunnel stuff. That was all clay modeling stuff, and it's almost a lost art.
Well, you're right. And manufacturers still do it, but it is so niche and so specialized.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But there is value to clay modeling for other things out there, you know, in the world. I mean, whether you're designing a toy, a product, industrial design, your product design, that sort of thing, engineering, there's certainly a lot of value. And even though computer design is getting so much better and sophisticated with VR to kind of get in the world, even with gloves and such, there is still an aspect of art and design and engineering where the human hand is, and human eye, when you can actually see it, feel it, touch it, do it, is far more sophisticated than the way we interface with computers.
Of course.
You know, and a perfect example is, I mean, think of all the gorgeous cars that were built in the 50s and 60s when, you know, you're hand-rolling aluminum or you're building fiberglass molds.
Yep.
And they were elegant, and they had great form, and the function was great, too. And you know, and nowadays, we're getting very complicated, and some designs are getting a little awkward. I think that's because of the computer interface issue.
Yeah, I agree. My wife is not a fan of the little Nissan Juke for that exact reason. You know, I'm sure it passed all the appropriate tests, but that's a weird looking car, and
There's a lot of looking cars nowadays.
Yeah, it's not aesthetically pleasing at all. I'm sure it does what it does.
And we've talked about this before, but basically most all car designs come out of the design center in L.A.
and
they've kind of got their hands in everything. But I want to back up for a moment and talk a little bit about the fact that you were saying that the hands-on. My son is now in mechanical engineering program at Wazoo up here, and one of the programs that they're doing is they got what they call the Baja 400, and it they got the little team of students.
Is it the mini Baja? Competition? Yes.
Yep. They have to build their own rig, and they have to compete, and I guess like thousands of schools enter in it, and only a few hundred end up making it because half of them don't even pass the inspection. But my son has been doing FIRST Robotics since seventh grade, and he says, Dad, when I get through mechanical engineering, I may go to Germany because I want to get hands-on. I want my hands on not only do I want to design, I want to have my hands involved with building and shaping, and he's so hands-on. And I told him, you know, there are some different really cool programs here in America, and you're doing that. You're taking that hands-on approach that you could take somebody who's got the CAD, that's got the engineering background, and then they get their hands dirty, and actually they're molding, and they're shaping, and they're working. And I think it's a fabulous thing. I also been to, have you ever heard of Corbin, who makes the seats and then all the accessories for motorcycles?
Yeah, I've had those on motorcycles before.
Okay, well, I was at a shop years ago, his factory, and what they do is they bring in the latest and greatest motorcycles. And the year that we were there, they just came out with the Polaris, or not Polaris, but the three-wheel, who was that, the Bombardier Can-Am, the Can-Am, actually. And
yeah,
and they were building the pirate booty or basically they were building bags for that thing, and I watched them how they were doing it. They were taking a piece of styrofoam and shaping it by hand with a rasp and getting the shape and the feel, and then they would do it. And once they got it, then they would make their mold. And oh my gosh, they crank stuff out so fast that way, and it's so incredibly. But it's all hands on.
Exactly, and that's that is a funny disconnect, and we're getting a little off topic, but when I mentioned that nature of how schools in the last 30 years have sold college prep and whatnot, part of the way they did it is like, look at our new whiz-bangy computers, this is how you do everything in the world. Well, no, it's not actually the only way you do it. There's so much value to hands-on and engineering that we're just missing in schools nowadays.
Well, I want to switch gears a little bit, because you have a YouTube channel where you kind of share your views and share your ideas and that kind of thing.
That's a whole other interesting thing.
That is taken off like wildfire. We're going to be launching one here shortly of our own.
Yes.
And one of the things you talked about was the aging out of a certain demographic within this industry and the need to bridge the gap between, let's say, the boomer and even beyond the boomer age and bring in get them to see the value of introducing this world of wonder to the younger generation and some of the challenges and stuff. So talk about that, because we know that. We know most custom shops cater to people that are older. So go ahead.
Well, one, thank you for noticing. Yeah, my YouTube channel, just under Casey Putch, really was an offshoot of me doing all those very successful VinWiki stories. And I saw that, and what I started to see after speaking to Ed, I told a story there that had meaning, you know, kind of like, hey, it's a 1950s or early 60s TV show, and at the end there's actually meaning, life meaning to it.
Yeah.
And I told that. I was so surprised that the Internet or people liked it. He goes, Casey, that's because there's no meaning on the Internet. So if people find something that has value to their lives and entertains them, they like it. And so with my own channel, I thought, you know, I can do incredible builds, but I'm not independently wealthy, and I've got Genius Garage to build. I don't want to try to compete with that. And I thought, the one thing I can do is be me, and I can tell stories to young people, car guys, school, life, whatever. So that's what I do. Every day, 8 o'clock in the morning, I have a video. It may be a motorcycle build, a car build, Genius Garage. It could be, you know, just a life thing. Like yesterday's video, believe it or not, dealing with depression for car guys and social media. So, that's what I have been finding a huge amount of value for young people out there, and it is growing very fast. What you were mentioning, the video relating to the disconnect from the baby boomer generation to younger, it's happened on a number of ways. One, the nature of the way the baby boomers were successful in business and life back then, you know, and when you translate that to cars, the ones that have been successful were able to get what they want, have beautiful car collections, beautiful car shows, vintage racing, et cetera. But the world changed so much from then to where, you know, effectively print media is dead, TV is dead. All of the old media ways to connect are gone. And now it's all phone and internet. So that sort of exacerbates an issue. But what I found the greatest failing for older car museums especially are they're static. They're not connected to young people.
Yeah.
And with all respect toward the older generations, the biggest disconnect from the baby boomers to any younger generation is, you know, I'll give you an example. And nothing negative towards it. I know people that have bought $100,000 or $200,000 custom landscape slot car tracks for their den and then get a magazine article out of it, and they're really excited. Ask me how much money goes to any young people building slot cars for the sake of engineering of the future.
There you go.
None.
Yeah.
Zero. So, and that same sort of thing is a problem in vintage racing. It's a problem in the Concours world. It's a problem with restorations. And frankly, it's just time for older people to go, hey, we need to go somewhere with this. We actually need to share. These things aren't just something that we covet in our little garage. We need to actually do something. And I've done that with Genius Garage. I've made history matter to the lives of young people. I've kickstarted careers in engineering. I had students getting six-figure jobs out of undergraduate degree because of it. And we do it with old race cars, old airplanes, all the things that the older generation thinks young people don't care about. And the reason why these young people become lifelong car guys and love history is because we made it matter to their lives. That's the key that's been missing.
Boy, it really is true. And, you know, that actually stimulates something that I have a fervent hope. I see in the news here just recently, Roger Penske just bought the, you know, Indy facility. And, of course, one of the things that's in there, if you've ever been there, in the infield is the museum with all of the old cars. And I really, really hope that I was very lucky to have gone there a couple of years ago. I really hope that he does something like that and makes those things accessible to people who aren't paying, you know, $300 to go to the races, because it's a phenomenal facility, and it'd really be great. It would be terrible to lose all of that stuff because it's not getting shared.
Oh, indeed. Well, and you know, that's a part of Genius Garage. So, you know, right now I've got some huge things working on that can make this be very big. And my plan is when I can build a flagship center, there's a museum component to it.
Great.
But instead of just cars that don't get touched, that just sit there and then come out once in a while, and oh, maybe they'll spend a bunch of money and transport it to a Concours. Everything that's there that's on display for the public will actually inspire them, because that's the stuff that the young people actually work on,
Super.
Do, take racing, fly, or build. You see how it's a full circle now?
Absolutely.
The things actually matter. We're actually using these great artifacts and things that matter to history in the world to make our future better for young people. So that's absolutely what's missing. The problem with museums, and the fact of the matter is, so many of them are just, frankly, well-heeled people's car collections.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The thing is, if these things matter so much for us to go look at them and pay money, well, then they matter enough to be able to teach with. And that's what I do with Genius Garage.
That is so true. In fact, I'll share a really quick personal story. When I was a kid, about 13, 14 years old, my folks took us on a car trip across the country. We stopped in Reno, and we went to the old Bill Harris, you know, collection at Harris Casino. And there were all kinds of cool cars there. Lots of them, of course, you couldn't touch. But the most impressive thing to me as a kid was to go into the fab shops and the restoration shops, because they let you go in there and fiddle around with the. I mean, you were right there. That, I honestly say, kickstarted my whole interest in cars. You know, those many years ago.
Very cool. Yes.
You know, Casey, it's really great that you came to talk with us. We would love to do this more. I mean,
we need to bring him on.
We could we could take a lot longer with this. But Casey's website is geniusgarageracing.com. Casey Puch has a YouTube channel with all kinds of cool videos on it. And Casey, thanks for staying up late. You're back on the East Coast. We appreciate you having a conversation with us.
Yeah.
Right on.
Well, it was very enjoyable, and I'm honored to be on. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much. Hey, put it in park. We're going to come back with number 5. The weekly trivia question is next, and we got a peek at next week's show. Do not go away, or I guarantee you will not be here when we come back.
listen, as a hiring manager, I've got to tell you, the best job candidate isn't always the typical candidate. Sometimes they're a grad of life.
Meet the grads of life. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Sometimes the best candidates aren't the ones you're used to.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent.
Stick around. We'll be back after these words.
Hey, car enthusiast, are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E-Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E-Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest-growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame-off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motor work, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E-Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
This is Cody with Bow Wow Air-Cooled. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you.
When it comes to saving money, don't act like a baby.
Goo goo gaga.
Be the boss and make a budget.
I'm the boss, baby.
You're the boss of me.
I am the boss of you.
Are not.
M2.
Are not.
M2.
Need a little help?
Aren't you going to do any work?
I'm very busy delegating.
Create a personalized savings plan.
We can share.
You obviously didn't go to business school.
And get other tools and tips at feedthepig.org.
It's time for Cars Confidential, and we're back with a story from the old car nut book, number one.
Numero uno.
Yes, what's up this week, this Brady?
Week, yes, this week, ladies and gentle spoon, we go for Biohazards in Blue.
Ooh, Biohazards in Blue.
Biohazards in Blue. This is a story by Edward Munday, Jr., and as mentioned, it is from the old car nut book, number one. David Dickinson has kindly allowed us to do that, and here's the way this story goes. From a few years ago, actually. My father, Edward Munday Sr., owned and operated Munday's Auto Trim Shop in Hickory, North Carolina, which is now Moore's Trim Shop. And from the time I was born until 1998, when he passed away, that was his shop. He would sometimes buy old cars to restore and redoing mostly the interiors and convertible tops or vinyl tops. And with a family and a shop to support, he did everything he could to make ends meet. The extra money from the occasional car passing through his hands went a long way towards getting by. Now, originally he had a shop in the town of Granite Falls, right where there's now a red light in front of the Granite Falls Walmart on U.S. Highway 321. Now, this is still in North Carolina. There's a Granite Falls in our home state of Washington,
yes,
too, but this is on the other side of the country. Back then, Highway 321 was a two-lane road, and the shop was also located in Hudson, North Carolina at one time, and even in Florida once, same name. So he opened up his last location in Hickory, North Carolina, on Highway 70 West, where he put in long hours and a lot of work. Now, Dad didn't live too far from the shop, so if he had a car finished or someone wanted to drop one off, he was always willing to go and open up for them. One time that he opened up was to let a tow truck drop off a car that somebody wanted to give him. Now, if you restore old cars, the information in this story might be of value to you and give you food for thought. My dad's story goes to prove that some of the articles you read in magazines are more important than you might expect. Such was an article that was read and set aside many years ago. In August of 98, Dad called me to say he had a very bad backache and he wanted me to make an appointment with a doctor for him, so I did. I told him time and time again to get a family doctor, but he would just say, well, I didn't need one because he never got sick. Obviously, he was very old school. The doctor I set him up with told him that he thought he probably had a kidney stone and gave him a prescription to pass the stone. The next day, Dad called the doctor and said he thought the meds were making the pain worse, so we went to a kidney specialist who took x-rays. The x-rays showed that he only had a very small stone, and the doctor said, well, it shouldn't be causing that much pain. Appointments were made to get more tests. Dad felt he wouldn't be able to afford all these treatments, and there was not a coalition for small businesses to have health insurance, so Dad always paid cash for everything. The prospect of a long string of doctor's visits worried him. He didn't have to worry for very long. 5 days after the pain had started, we ended up in the Catawba Medical Hospital emergency room. They took x-rays of his chest first thing. Doctor came out of the office, put the x-rays up on the screen, and then he just dropped his head. He said, "Mr. Monday, you have stage 4 lung cancer." My wife and I and my dad were all absolutely stunned. We all asked, "Well, what should we do next?" And the doctor said there really wasn't anything that could be done. We needed to make final arrangements. Dad was ready for hospice right away. He died 1 month to the day after having the initial back pain. The death certificate read, "Lung cancer of unknown origin." Now, years before, when I worked at the shop, there was an auto trim and restyling magazine which pictured and told of a car you didn't want to work on without proper precautions. The car was a blue 63 Dodge, and it reportedly had asbestos behind the headliner and under the carpet for insulation purposes.
Ooh.
I had shown the photo and the story to Dad a long time ago, but of course it was set aside and not much was thought about it after that initial look. The magazine worked its way to the bottom of a stack like so many others that had arrived in the mail before it. When I went to close up shop, while the hospice team and a family member were caring for Dad at home, I noticed that a car that was almost finished. The car was a 63 Dodge, and it was even blue. The seats were finished, the carpet installed, and about half the headliner was installed. I later found out that an older lady had the car hauled off from her home because it no longer ran, and she couldn't afford to have it fixed. She had seen on TV where companies would haul old cars off for free. Her daughter knew of my dad and his shop, and she got the Dodge back from the junkyard and gave it to him. She didn't know that the car was a biohazard, and Dad was just going about his business, fixing up another old car to make a profit. Neither of them realized how the story would end. It's difficult to say that this one car could have affected him so quickly, but over a period of time, he'd probably encountered many other cars with similar materials. How many cars out there have passed through the hands of restorers that may have had similar secrets? Now, in the end, there were no lawsuits or big insurance payouts, just a great auto trimmer that went home to be with Jesus. And, you know, it's funny. While that story is kind of sad, and, you know, you don't like to hear those things, yet for years, I mean for decades, in the car business and in the home business and everything, there were a ton of hazardous materials used.
Big time.
Never even thought about. I mean, lead paint. I mean, all kinds of stuff.
A lot
of
manufacturing jobs. Just general.
And asbestos was everywhere.
Well, even farming. I mean, if you think about all the stuff you're using to spray down. Yeah, and
welcome to Monsanto and so many lawsuits over various and sundry. I mean, what's the one that's currently being hated now? Roundup.
Roundup.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm very fortunate to have a large family on both my parents' side. And one of my mother's brothers, as he got older and couldn't, you know, do much except sort of sit and think about his memories, he wrote down a lot of stories about when they were growing up. And many of those stories had to do with being out on the farm in Montana and out on the ranch and stuff and finding, you know, stuff in the barn or in the shed, some weird green crystal stuff. And it's like, I don't have any idea what that might have been, but you shouldn't have probably been eating it or putting it on cookies, you know. And
they
did stuff like that. And you never really thought about it. And yet people died of all kinds of nonspecific stuff.
Yeah.
Because, of course, medical science wasn't as good back in the day. And I guess it gives me pause to think now how many people are out there restoring and ratting old cars, 75-year-old cars. Who knows what's in some of those things? And
I think I'll wear a mask when I pulled out the interior of my El Camino.
Yeah, it's worth
because the mold itself is going to be bad enough.
Yeah, it's worth being a little careful. You know, I mean, we love these hobbies and we love doing these things. But you know, last couple of weeks I've been talking about the 51 Hudson that Georgia won in the raffle, and fortunately, a lot of the interior of that car is already gone. I don't have much to take out.
Right,
but you know, it makes you think, well, so what's behind this door panel? I mean, what kind of insulation was in this headline and stuff like that? So it just makes it worth taking a little time. And, you know, masks and respirators are cheap.
Yeah, they are.
And it's, you know, a cautionary tale.
Look,
not a fun one tonight, but worth paying attention
to. It is. And I've been guilty of rattle canning something and not putting on a mask because I wear glasses. And I'll tell you what. Masks and glasses do not work. They fog up. And so I've seen that you've got the full face kind of thing where the painters, they put the full face type thing.
Oh,
and I may just get one of those for when I go to do actual spraying.
Not
because
a bad idea.
That way my glasses are inside and it's not going to be it, otherwise, you just put that mask. And I still wear a dust mask, but half the time I have to stop when I just do with my woodworking.
Sure.
And wait till my glasses stop steaming, and then I put it back on. And
yep.
You know.
Well, you know, safe is better than sorry. And, you know, we all of us who do these kinds of things with, you know, old stuff, that stuff is there.
It is. And, you know, we have I wanted to just touch on something. A really quick update. Some 10,000 UAW workers voting on a tentative contract with Ford Motor Company will get a bigger raise than expected if the deal is approved.
That's kind of cool.
Voting is scheduled to end November 15th. The two sides revised a section of the deal that could cost the automaker an additional $15 million.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, that's a really small price to pay.
Well, yeah, considering the
$15 million, $10,000, that's really
game,
peanuts.
The game they're playing is much bigger than that. So that's
and they got billions of dollars sitting away, stashed away. It's not like they don't have money. So I want the UAW to come out on top on this.
And what do you get in exchange? I mean, you get worker safety, and that goes to better attitude, and it's
right.
And hey, thanks to David Dickinson, by the way, for the
letting
us use the Old Car Nut book series. They are available on Amazon. You can get them at oldcarnutbook.com. As we always say, they're great gifts, and we're getting towards the Christmas gifting season, so you know somebody have three of these things sitting there in front of the tree would be pretty slick.
Yeah, it would be, and you know the nice thing about gifts. Maybe go on and get some cartoons. Get
Cartoons Magazine is back in publication.
Cartoonsmag.com. Check them out. That'd be a great place to go to get a subscription. Tell your wife, hey, just give me $35. I'll get a subscription for myself.
And there you go.
So stick with us. We got more, and we got the trivia question coming up next.
You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old-school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
Hang on till right after these messages.
Hey y'all, I'm Blake Shelton. I love that country music connects people all over this great nation, but unfortunately so does something else, childhood hunger. 15 million children struggle with hunger in America. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks works to rescue our surplus food to help provide billions of meals to families in need across the country. Join the fight against hunger at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
In 95, I helped tow your trailer. And in 09, it was sparks from me, your chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
This is Donnie Smith. You've been listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. Enjoy yourself.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car-crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
Help us if you can, you're an El Camino, El Camino man, only.
Well, welcome back to Around the Wheel. This is where we talk about upcoming events and the weekly trivia question. There are some cool upcoming events, although they're a little bit ways off. There's going to be a brand new Show and Shine car show in the North Seattle area next year, and a special announcement about that is coming next week on the show.
Oh, cool.
So stick close.
We got the Seattle International Auto Show showing up November 14th.
Yeah, it's like this weekend.
It is.
That'd be very cool.
14th through the 17th.
Go down there and see all the cars I can't afford to buy.
Yes.
There are some good ones, though. Last week when we sat in these very chairs, we had a great trivia question. I'm sorry, I've got a peanut in my teeth. we had a great trivia question. Maybe the most fun trivia question we've had in some time, because it's one of those where you can't just fake it. You got to actually do some research. And
right.
I knew that the Google pages were burning up last week after
yes.
the show. The question was, what was possibly, and this is where it gets weird, because there's potentially a bunch of answers.
Yeah.
What was possibly the rarest, most gutless muscle car that ever held the name and was ever produced? And when I say rarest, it's not that they didn't make so many of them. It's that there's hardly any left.
Okay.
That was the criteria. And we got quite a few answers, but and everybody was pretty creative. I mean, there was some interesting stuff in there. But we actually got the correct answer from Ashri Thielemann.
Huh.
And Ashri is from Canada, and he emailed me and said, I think it may be this one. And he's absolutely right. In 1977, Chevy was, of course, you know, bouncing around trying to make something out of the muscle car thing. And they debuted this model in 75. It was the Monza Mirage.
Oh.
But here's the deal. It was a compact in 75. It came with a modern design. It was kind of updated, cool-looking trim levels and all that stuff. It followed the Vega,
mm-hmm.
and it sold pretty well in the U.S. They marketed it abroad as well, but the performance version, they didn't really have a performance version. It was just sort of a nifty little compact.
Right.
Sort of sporty. So Chevy knew that if they put a more powerful engine in it, now you could do something. Well, they didn't think that the performance model or the muscle car edition would have a big market, so they didn't even bother developing it, but they got a hold of Michigan Auto Technologies. Or Auto Techniques. They're an outside company, and they said, make us a muscle car Monza for 77. So they did. And they called it the Monza Mirage, and they produced it for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
They only made 4,000 of them.
Wow.
Right? And it had a 305 V8, but
100 horsepower?
145 horsepower.
Oh, yeah.
145 horsepower. Now, that's the same horsepower that a 1951 Hudson Hornet had.
That's also the same amount of horsepower that my 77 Monte Carlo had, and it was a 350.
Yeah, I mean, it was a gutless pig. The design was pretty cool. It had a white body and special wheels. It looked a little bit like a Grand National. I mean, it was kind of cool from that standpoint. Patriotic, red, white, and blue stripes all over the
place. I remember that now.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they knew there was still a market for a sporty version, so they put the Monza Spider in for 78, and that
was the one.
Yeah. And that left Michigan Auto Techniques without a contract for 78, so the Mirage was only made for 1 year.
Right.
Today, there may be a handful of them still around. Mostly they're gone. So if you find one, restore it, because it's pretty rare. It's a long forgotten. So Ashri came up with a 77 Chevy Monza Mirage, even had the Mirage part. And so Ashri's going to get pictured with the can of barn find dust. And next week's contest or question is even better. How many Volkswagen Beetles sold in their first year? How many Volkswagen Beetles sold in their first year of production?
Are we talking way back when they first started produced?
Yeah. How many Beetles sold in their first year? You might know, and if you do, just go to our Facebook page, give us the answer, send us a message. Either way, you can email us at contact@horsepowerchromeandrust.com. How many Beetles in their first year of production? It's not what you think. You think you know it, but you don't. And I'm talking in the United States, by the way. How many sold in the United States? All right? So, thanks for listening. We really appreciate it. It was great to talk to Carrie Putsch tonight. As usual, we are available on all of the appropriate venues, and you too can be a sponsor of the show, or at least a supporter of the show, by just tuning in and listening. For Shane Osborne and Steve Johann, I'm Brady Wright. Keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel, your foot to the floor. Next week, we do it again on Horsepower, Chrome and Rust.